From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This hour, we welcome one of the candidates for Congress in New York's 27th Congressional District. There is a special election on Tuesday. You've got three ways to vote this year. Vote early in person, vote by mail, or vote on Special Election Day in person. You know by now that the previous member of Congress for that district, Chris Collins, pleaded guilty to a menu of federal charges related to corruption and insider trading. He's headed to 26 months in prison. 2 years ago, Collins decided to stay in the race despite the specter of indictment. He swore all of those charges against him were false, even though later he said that they were very real. He won a very close victory over Democrat Nate McMurray, the Grand Island supervisor who challenged him. McMurray is back for another race, and this time his Republican opponent is State Senator Chris Jacobs. WXXI reached out to both parties, hoping to hold a televised debate. Jacobs did not respond, and so we've offered time on Connections to discuss the issues. This hour, my guest is Nate McMurray, candidate for Congress in New York's 27th Congressional District. Nate, welcome back to the program.
Evan, thank you, and thank you for trying to have that debate. I appreciate it. I think many of your listeners also appreciate it.
Well, and I want to make sure I'm accurate and clear on a point and maybe correct the record earlier. Not that I think you speak to him often, but Chris Collins still has not been sent to prison, right? Has that been pushed off?
Yeah, and I think I don't think it's too speculative to say if we lose, he may never go to prison. I mean, I think that's part of the deal. Well, listen, do you think it's out of the range of possibilities that he'll be paroled and he's delayed his imprisonment every single time? Every time he's going to go to jail, he delays it until after the special election. He was supposed to be in prison earlier. He delayed it until after April 28th. Here we are again. He delayed it until after this election. So it's either strange timing or he's someone who is trying to avoid jail, and
well,
I think based on his history.
He doesn't get to delay it. A judge, right? A judge delayed it, keeps pushing it back, and they're citing the pandemic.
They are, and they are always going to cite something. And I think that most of us, you know, if we get a speeding ticket, they throw the book at us. But for this guy, he's delayed his imprisonment over and over again. And I've been dealing with him and his crew long enough to see that I wouldn't put anything past these guys.
Well, and I would say this to Chris Jacobs, and I will say it to you, this district in Western New York has been through a lot with Chris Lee, Chris Collins. I mean, whoever wins this seat, you're gonna really have to be a Boy Scout.
Well, listen, I am a Boy Scout. Literally, I'm an Eagle Scout. So I never stole a pack of gum. And I think if you look at the way Chris Jacobs has run his campaign, it's very similar to the way Chris Collins ran his campaign. He's hired the same people. He's hired some of Paul Manafort's people, and he's hiding. He hid from you. He had that one debate with me where he performed very, very poorly. And, you know, I feel bad for the people of NY27 that this is the best that the political machine can offer.
Well, elections tend to have fixed bases of support and a small sort of mushy middle that can be swayed based on a range of issues. So what do you ultimately think this election is about? What's going to convince people to vote for Jacobs or McMurray?
Well, listen, it's a gerrymandered district. We all know that. That's why Chris Collins won. And it's dependent. The victory of Chris Jacobs is dependent on the same factors, which is allegiance to the party and allegiance to President Trump. Now, when I ran against Chris Collins, President Trump was a lot more popular than he is today. And, people have seen who he is by this point. And I think that Chris Jacobs is trying to rely heavily on his adoration for President Trump, which didn't exist until about 6 months ago, by the way. But he's trying to rely heavily on that adoration to pull him across the finish line. I think without the gerrymandered district, none of these people would ever have a chance of being elected. And I think when we redistrict NY27 and the rest of New York State, I think the history of this terrible series of criminals, literally, and people who've resigned to take advantage of the district should be taken into account.
Talking to Nate McMurray, who is running for Congress. And listeners, if you want to join the program, questions or comments, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And Nate, you laughingly noted recently that the Buffalo News has discovered on Twitter that you don't like President Trump. I think the larger point, though, was that it can be viewed in a district that is you know, that's got the voter rolls the way it does, that is, as you say, part of a series of gerrymandered districts in this country, it can be a political risk to be as outspoken as you are about the president in a district that does have some very strong Trump support. Do you think your vocal opposition to President Trump is a risk in this race?
It's not only a risk, it hurts me tremendously. Now, I could do what every other politician does and just fake it and say, oh, yeah, President Trump has some good points and go with the flow. But I feel a strong duty when you have someone who is such a criminal, someone who has absolutely violated our standards. If we don't speak out against him, even when it hurts us and may hurt our political aspirations, then we don't have a right to serve as far as I'm concerned. And I couldn't live with myself unless I wasn't a strong critic of this president at this time. We have millions of people out of work. The economy is in shambles. There's such division. There's more division and unhappiness in this country than there's ever been. And hundreds of thousands of people have died. Over 100,000 people have died, and more will die from a virus that was completely mishandled. I have a duty. I hope to go to Congress, but while I'm running for Congress and advocating for the people I care about in this region, I have a duty to say this is wrong. So yes, would a political pundit or a consultant tell me it's the wrong thing to do to be a vocal critic of President Trump? Yes. But does my conscience demand so? Yeah, I have to. I have to be, Evan, I have to say what's right. And I think everyone listening, we have to stand up and do what's right and fight this president because he's taken us away from who we are.
Okay. When you make it clear that you find it obvious on its face that this is a president who is, as you say, has done things that are criminal, that have taken us away from who we are as a people. 2 years ago, you told me that it is very important to you to be able to at least go door to door, talk to neighbors, talk to voters and say, all right, you're a Trump voter. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about why. Do you still do that? And why do you think there are still tens of millions of people who support this president? What's motivating that support?
I absolutely do that. I do that more than any other candidate's ever run at NY27. I've been to every single inch of this place. I don't think Chris Jacobs knows where half these towns are. I don't think he could find them on a map. And I absolutely do that. I'll talk to any single person. And I also am very proud that 2 years ago you asked me a very pointed question. You said, do you think President Trump is a white nationalist? And for a moment I paused because I said, what's the political thing to say? And then in my heart I said, what's the right thing to say? And you can go back and look at that tape, Evan. I looked at you and I said, yes, I do believe so. Because he is, and he's tearing this country apart. Now, can I find common ground with people to talk? And back, but I got to add, when I said it back then, a lot of people after the show called me and said, oh, that was so stupid to say, but I already saw what he was doing to this country. Do I find ways to talk to people? Yes. I am a product of this area, this region. I am one of seven. My mother was a widow. My father died when he was 39. He did not own a construction company. He did drywall for a living. I started off at community college. My family had a farm up in Niagara County. The farm failed. I know exactly what the people of Western New York are going through, and whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, I'll say what I feel is right, but I'll also listen to you. And I keep saying to the people at NY27, all these other candidates have one thing they're saying. I'm going there to fight to support Donald Trump. Well, I don't really care. I'm going there to support the people of NY27. Neither Democrats or Republicans. I am going to listen to the people here, and that's what I've been doing for 2+ years.
And so what is it that you think is still motivating a lot of support for Trump in that district?
Well, I'm not sure how much there is left. We'll have to see on Tuesday, right? But I think a lot of people were first motivated by Trump because he's a great salesman. And even though it's hard for us to say that, we know it's true. He's an incredible marketer. And his story was compelling. He said, look, America's been taken advantage of. We've lost a lot. You've been forgotten, and I'm going to have your back. And political outsiders are important. That message still resonates. In many ways, I'm a political outsider. You know that. I've always fought my way from the outside. Jacobs ran for lieutenant governor, I think, when I was in high school. He's been in politics his entire life. His only business venture that did anything was a failed healthcare savings account that bankrupted. So he's been a lifelong politician, and he's exactly what's opposite of the Trump message. The problem with the Trump message is all the promises President Trump made have not come to pass. Drug prices are not lower. We have not built infrastructure. The country is not great. The country is in much worse shape than it was 3.5 years ago. So I think a lot of people are waking up to see, we wanted him to be what he says he was, but he's not. You know, the emperor has no clothes, and we have to go a different direction. And I think they still want some of the same things. They want us to figure out a way to bring jobs back to the United States. They want these areas to have infrastructure. They want a future for their children. And they also want people who are outsiders, who are independent voices, but they see that Donald Trump is none of those things.
Talking to Nate McMurray, who is running for Congress in the special election in NY27, three ways that you can vote, and the special election day is, of course, on Tuesday, next Tuesday, the 23rd of June. Chris Collins, due in August, to head to prison for 26 months, but we'll see. His prison sentence start has been delayed several times. Chris Jacobs running against Nate McMurray, and we reached out to the Jacobs campaign several times and have invited and offered equal time. So Nate McMurray is our guest for this hour. Let's talk about jobs here. You came within a whisker of being in Congress now. You would have had a vote on the federal coronavirus relief packages that pumped about $3 trillion in various directions, a lot of it in SBA, Small Business Administration, small business loans, payroll protection. Would you have voted for those bills?
I would have. There's a lot of things I liked about the bills, but there's a lot of things I hated about the bills, and I wish the Democratic Party had fought harder against. I mean, they knew there was going to be no oversight for the $600 billion slush fund they created. I mean, the question is, did the Jacobs family get money from that slush fund? I'd like to know. But none of us can find out. No one knows where that money went.
Why are you insinuating that the Jacobs family would have gotten money?
Because a lot of companies did get money, and we don't know. So we do know they've had tax breaks before. We do know they've had benefits before. Did they get from this package? I've asked Chris Jacobs. He won't answer the question. Do we know if the Trump family got money from this? Do we know? We don't know. And that's the problem. $600 billion, and we don't know where it is. I sometimes encounter people who are angry about their neighbor getting food stamps or getting some type of supplemental relief when they're in trouble. But if you look at our overall budget, that's a small fraction of our overall budget. And yet we consistently give away trillions of dollars and billions of dollars to the largest corporations that are already flush with cash. And so I tell people, that's not trickling down. It's trickling out of the United States. It's going to China. It's going to India. It's going to the place of highest return. And so, yeah, I think it's a fair question. Did the Jacobs get money from it? Is Chris Jacobs going to be an advocate for the Delaware North family or the Delaware North company when he becomes a congressman? We can't even ask him the questions because he's not here today. We do know they have business interests across NY27. They have two casinos in NY27. How close are they to the Trump family? The Trump family seems to be advocating very hard for Chris Jacobs suddenly. I mean, they did a town hall last night with Kimberly Guilfoyle, Donald Jr.'s girlfriend or fiance, and Don Jr. is consistently praising Chris Jacobs online. I think these are legitimate questions. Do these billionaire families have connections? Are they benefiting from these programs? If so, how much? And how much of it has actually trickled down to the people of Western New York?
Okay, so but this is mildly confusing for me, and I want you to clear up something
Sure.
here. So I asked you if you'd have voted for these federal relief bills that did not include a UBI in terms of an ongoing UBI. You've praised Andrew Yang recently, I think. Boy, I'm going by Twitter memory. Is that correct?
No, it's okay.
I thought you said he's the real deal.
He's endorsed me. I think he's a very intelligent man who's brought a lot of great ideas to the forefront.
Okay.
Yes, he's endorsed me.
And one of his big ones is universal basic income, not just during a pandemic, but in general. His idea is $1,000 a month ongoing for American adults. UBI, though, is something that Canada, some other nations have adopted for citizens for sometimes for 4 months, sometimes for the duration of the pandemic. The United States did a $1,200 one time plus $500 per child, obviously, as you know. That was part of these bills, but that was it. And then there are small business loans that went, especially in that first round, but they've been very difficult to get for some small businesses that don't have paid attorneys, cozy relationships with banks. The Los Angeles Lakers got a loan, Shake Shack.
Right.
I mean, these are small businesses that got loans and some returned them sort of rather glamorously. And now, as you say, there's oversight problems, big oversight problems. I'm confused as to why you would have voted for these bills.
Well, I would have voted because I think there was an emergency and we had to get some financial help to the people of America, the regular people of America. Now, I wouldn't have put my foot down and say we're not doing anything. I would have demanded additional oversight. And I wish I had been in Washington to demand that oversight. I have to say, sometimes you have to take some action. That is better than no action. But additional action is needed right now by Congress to say, where did that $600 billion go? Where did the $180 million in tax cuts for real estate developers go? And, you know, the devil's in the details. I understand there was an emergency and we had to take action. But if there's money that's been given out to people who do not need it, how can we claw that back? And what steps can we take to fix the issues?
Are you confident that Congress is going to provide the necessary oversight to make sure literally hundreds of billions of dollars don't sort of vanish or you know, fail to be accounted for?
I hope so. Listen, if you send me to Washington, I'll make sure it gets done. If you've been paying attention for the last 2.5 years, you can say, even if you don't agree with me, I'm someone who's going to be open and sincere and advocate for what I believe in and fight. And I'll go to Washington. I'll fight for oversight. This is not a trifling thing. This is not a small thing. $600 billion is gone. If you're talking about looting in America, that's some serious looting. I want to know where it went. Who's got the money? I don't got any of the money, Evan. Did you get any of the money? Let's figure out where the money went.
Nate McMurray is our guest. What's your website if people want to learn more about the issues, Nate?
VoteMcMurray.com.
VoteMcMurray.com. Jacobs4, the number 4, Congress.com is his opponent's website. Chris Jacobs, who did not respond to our various outreach in recent weeks, though we have offered equal time, and we're hopeful about that. Let me grab Linda in Penfield on the phone. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Evan, and hi, Nate. This is Linda, formerly from North Tonawanda. My question to you, Nate, is what do you think is the first best thing we can do to change policing in our communities and in our country? And I'll just hang up and I will listen for your response.
Okay. Thanks very much, Linda. Go ahead, Nate.
Well, we have to find ways to ban human rights violations like chokeholds that kill people, and also have ways that these police officers that act inappropriately can be held accountable in a court of law. There's too many protections for them. And by the way, I got to say, you know, good to hear from someone from North Tonawanda, my hometown, home of the Lumberjacks. Good to hear you, Linda. Beyond that, listen, I was a small town supervisor. And I had a deal. I was the commissioner of police in that small town, and 95% of the police officers were wonderful people that I loved. But we had issues. There was racist emails that were sent around. There was other issues regarding inappropriate behavior, and I took action. It was almost impossible for me to take the action I needed to take, swift action. And we ended up in court, and we ended up in an arbitration hearing to negotiate a settlement.
Because of a union?
Because of the protections under the law for officers that are so expansive. And look, listen, there was behavior that was very clearly wrong. And, you know, we ended up having to find another way to remove the officer. And it was incredibly frustrating for me. And I know that many other people across the country that have been, we have situations we can see. We can look them up on YouTube where people have been openly abused and have been unable to take action against the police officers because there's so many legal protections under our laws. There's immunities that exist under our laws. There's union protections under our laws. So when you're giving – every kid who's ever read a comic book understands, with much power becomes much responsibility, right, or however you want to phrase it. We give police officers the right to kill, literally. That's why they carry arms and the weapons. So there must be greater responsibility on the behalf of police officers. And part of that responsibility can be coming from legal action that citizens can take against the officers. Now, my opponent has voted against removing such barriers or impediments to taking legal action against officers. He did it last week. He also voted against COVID sick pay during the height of the pandemic. But we can give lip service to the issues, or we can take substantial steps to make our officers more part of our communities and also more accountable. So I think taking a hard look at a lot of those protections is the first and most important step.
Would you vote in Congress to end qualified immunity for police?
Yes, I would.
Would you vote to change or curb or end a pipeline of supplies from the military going from the Pentagon to local police departments?
Yes, I would. And listen, this is the difference between me and these other politicians. I will say that to you clearly and not give you a pivot. Yes, I would. I was overseas for a long time. When I first came back home from the United States from being in Asia, I remember going to downtown Buffalo and going to Niagara Square, and I remember seeing two vehicles that looked like tanks parked in the middle of Niagara Square, and two officers that were completely jacked, covered in body armor, with German Shepherds. And I had a moment of just shock and fear, thinking, is this a military occupation? Now, do I think those officers are horrible human beings? No, they're probably scared. You know, that's probably part of the problem. But we have to figure out ways to integrate these people into our community so they can really protect and serve, instead of training them over and over again that everyone is a threat. Because we're not all threats. And our country should not be viewed as a place that needs to be occupied. And the fact that our president wanted to use military forces against our own civilians, that should be something that gets every single person to the ballot box on next Tuesday, on June 23rd, to say no. And I want to say to all you guys out there, if you're upset about what's happening in this country, if we pull off this victory in this gerrymandered district, it'll be a message. It'll be a message against the status quo, why we pick politicians like Chris Jacobs, and how we shouldn't do this, and how we should have a more open and democratic process. And it'll be a message against Donald Trump, to saying, look, whether I like you or don't like you, President Trump, the things you're doing need to be checked. And we're sending you a message right here from Western New York.
Talking to Nate McMurray, who's running for Congress. Let me follow the point you made from when you were a supervisor and you were kind of evaluating incidents in policing there. And you say, you know, 95% of police officers were wonderful people doing the work they were hired to do. So this is, and this is going to be clumsy, but whatever. A lot of these conversations are clumsy right now. This is a moment where there's a lot of conversations about bad apples, or is it just one officer, or is it 1%, or are most doing the right thing? I'm really sort of empathetic to a lot of different viewpoints on this. I know a lot of police officers. I mean, I'm from Ohio originally. I know a number of people who are cops in Ohio. I know certainly some police officers here. I would put them in the category of good people, and I respect the work they do. And I'm sure in many days it's very hard, and I think it's important. I also am empathetic to the idea that police are not just agents of the state, but they're armed. And the standard has to be extremely high when you put weapons in the hands of the state. And
right.
So the standards have to be high, the expectations have to be high, and there can't be a lot of wiggle room there. It's the bad apples thing that's tough, because while I understand the idea there's a lot of really good people policing, and I think that's undeniably true, I also know that incident in Buffalo where the officer knocks over a 75-year-old protester, a gentleman with a history of doing work for nonviolent causes. He hits his head. He's literally bleeding on the street. I mean, obviously, this has been a high-profile issue across the country, let alone in your district. But it wasn't one officer. It was the other officers who watched this man bleeding. And then, days later, it was 57 officers who said, fine, we're resigning from that union, from that unit. So it wasn't one. And I'm wondering what the culture issue is that allows those things to happen. Not just knocking a guy down in the street, but to walk by him when there's blood pouring out of his ear, and then days later to say that we were the victims and we're going to resign. So does that change some of your calculation at all here?
Yes, and well said, Evan. Everything you said needs to be said more often. We have a cultural problem. And we know we have a history of racism. And you can write this off as a few bad apples, but if you went to Wegmans and you bought a few bad apples and people died, you send in the health department and you do a full review. You can't accept those excuses any longer. And what happened in Buffalo is shameful. I mean, we've had a couple really horrible things happen in Western New York for the last few years. You had Chris Lee, who resigned in disgrace, two special elections in 10 years in NY27. Chris Collins is a fiasco. Let's be honest about it. The fact that he was voted in is shameful. And then we have the situation in Buffalo where a man was injured. I stood on a stage for a debate last week with Chris Jacobs when he was asked bluntly, do you denounce the tweet by President Trump saying that this poor gentleman that was injured was a conspiracy and he was some type of crisis actor? And he said, a lot more is going to come out. He would not denounce the tweet. So do we have a cultural problem in this country? And on many levels, yes. And the fact that those officers cheered him was wrong. And we're not going to fix it unless we're bold about it. It's the same thing with the Trump problem. Of course, it's not easy for me to say President Trump is a problem and we have to face him. But unless somebody's willing to say it, and I need, Evan, you need to say it, and everybody listening needs to say it, and I hope some of you listening in your cars right now are at least cheering along, we all have to say it. We have a problem in this country with racism we need to address. We have a problem with the president who's encouraging racism, and we need to push back against the president. And whether it's a little uncomfortable for us to say it, and whether it hurts us politically or otherwise, we need to say it, or we're going to love this. We're going to lose this country we love so much.
Before I get back to listener phone calls and feedback here, be specific. If you're in Congress, what's something else you feel like is within reach that you can be part of that will impact race and the sort of the our society for the better on that score in this country?
Well, I said we can remove qualified immunity, and we can stop. We can end the militarization of the police forces. Those are two things we can start off real quick. And I think beyond that, we can ban the type of chokeholds and other type of measures that police forces across the country use regularly and should not be using.
Nate McMurray is joining us here, and after our only break of the hour, we'll get back to your phone calls. If you're on the line, we'll get your questions in for him. You can email the program as well, connections@wxxi.org. He is running against Chris Jacobs in a special election on Tuesday. Of course, you can vote now. You can vote early in person. You can vote on the day in person, or you can vote by mail. This is the seat that was previously held by Chris Collins, who is headed for prison. Nate McMurray, Chris Jacobs, both invited to this program. Nate McMurray is here, and we'll get to your questions next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, we wrap up our series of interviews with candidates who you are seeing on your ballots now, whether it's in special or primary elections. Early voting has begun, and of course, we've got the election on Tuesday. We've got mail-in ballots. You're going to hear from candidates for State Assembly and State Senate on Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let's get to your phone calls. Andrew in Irondequoit, next up. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, Nate, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Hey, you know, you sound, when you talk about business and the oversight, you sound like you're accusing all of the businesses of being crooks. I'm sure most of that money was legitimately taken and spent, don't you think?
We don't know. Do you know? We have no idea because they won't tell us.
Wait a minute. You do have an idea. You have an idea that most of it is, are you saying all of those businesses, you don't even know? That most
nobody
of those
knows.
Are legitimate?
That's the problem. Wait, let me tell you. Let me answer the question. By their own response, the Trump administration is telling us, we are not going to tell you who we gave the money to or where it is.
Okay.
So you don't know, and I don't know, and that's the problem. If you heard some town councilman stole $500 in Irondequoit, you'd probably have a conniption fit, and rightfully so.
Right.
And here we're losing $500 billion, and you don't care where it is?
Wait a minute. Just like you said that 95% of the police guys that you know are great guys, 95% of the businesses that you go to are great businesses, don't you think?
Wait. My whole life I've been in business. I have more business experience in my pinky than Chris Jacobs has in his whole body.
Okay, good.
I've been employed – let me finish. I've been employed by some of the biggest companies in the world for my expertise. I worked my way up from community college to advise. I understand a budget. I understand a spreadsheet. And I can help people make money. I've helped create jobs all the way across America.
Good.
We're not talking about attacking businesses. We don't know where $600 billion is. And it's not about the businesses. It's about where the money went.
It went
and
to
now
those
you should
businesses.
But what businesses? There's no list. There's no list.
Know.
It could have all went to the Trump. You don't know, and neither do I. It could have went to the Trump administration. We have no idea where it went. That's the problem.
Okay. It just sounds like you're accusing all business. You just sound very anti-business when you speak like that. That's all.
I don't think so. I love business. I want to help business in Western New York. For too long, we've had a guy like Chris Jacobs who's represented most of NY27 or a huge part of NY27 already, and we have the worst job market in the country. And everybody listening should understand that. We don't have the worst job market in New York State. According to the Wall Street Journal, NY27 has the worst job market in the country. So what has a guy like Chris Jacobs done? Nothing. He has done nothing to help the situation. And so we're going to give him a raise and we're going to give him a promotion? I don't hate business. I want to help business. I think we need accountability. And we don't know where $600 billion is, and I think everybody out there should be concerned about it.
Well, what is something that a member of Congress in your district is going to do that in 2 years of a two-year term or even in 5 years is going to change the business climate?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much we can do. We can push. I can go in there right away and work with Congressman Higgins and Congressman Morelli and say, can we get an infrastructure package, a bill passed immediately? Can we fight for it? It's low-hanging fruit. President Trump promised us infrastructure. He promised us. We've had nothing. And let's not blame the Democrats. Everyone out there should know it wasn't only the Democrats. He had control of the Congress at one point. He had control of the Senate at one point. And he had the courts. And what he did with that is give a tax cut that gave 83% of the benefits to 1% of the people. 83% of the benefits to 1% of the people. That's by their own estimates. So one of the things we can do right away, I can work with Congressman Higgins and Congressman Morelli and say, let's put together an infrastructure bill right now. Let's put it on the desk of the leadership. Let's get it passed, and let's make a big deal out of it. Because infrastructure, not talking about fixing our existing roads, putting in broadband, would create jobs not tomorrow, not next week, right away. And I'll tell you why that's the case. All the major unions back me. The AFL-CIO backs me. Other unions across Western New York back me because they know I'll help bring jobs back to NY27.
When it comes to taxes, you have been consistent in your condemnation of, people call them the Trump tax cuts, whatever they are, and where the benefits of those tax cuts have flowed. I want to ask you about something that some in your party have debated, especially in the Democratic presidential primaries. Elizabeth Warren, who last fall was a front runner, who's still on the short list perhaps to be a vice presidential candidate, she's talked about a billionaires and a super millionaires tax. 2 cents on every dollar over $50 million that someone has made. Do you agree with that?
In some form, it's a necessity. Now, let me tell you why, everyone out there listening. I want to lower the tax burden on regular people, working people. Because when you cut the taxes on the top 1%, like they've done over and over again since the early 80s, the money has to come from somewhere. You can't just fix roads for free. Where do you think the money's come from? It's come from increased property taxes, increased sales taxes, increased income taxes on regular people. They've shifted the burden from the millionaires and the billionaires to the guys working at the UAW plant. That's what's happened. So, of course, we have to reshift the burden up and decrease the burden on regular people because they are more equipped to bear that burden. So, yes, I'm all for that. Do you think? And here's the thing is, we get all up in arms talking about a wealth tax when we've done the exact opposite over and over and over again. Nobody was crying in the streets 2 years ago when we passed a tax cut that helped 83% of the benefits went to 1% of the people. Now, every time we do that, and we've done it over and over again, and it's put Social Security at risk, it's put Medicare at risk, it's put Medicaid at risk, every time we do that, the money has to come from somewhere else. And it's coming out of the listeners of this show's pocket. And they have to understand that. When they say most of the benefits go to the rich, that's okay, the rich need the money. Maybe they can invest in cars and houses or something else and it will help us. No. Eventually, that tax burden leaks down to you guys. The only trickle-down and trickle-down economics is the trickle-down of the tax burden trickle-down to you.
Well, when you talk about infrastructure as a way to spur jobs, let's say that happens. Let's say you go to Congress, you really bang that drum for infrastructure. It happens. It's a big one. It's a trillion-dollar infrastructure plan. It's a lot of jobs across the country. But then that infrastructure gets taken care of, gets built. What is a permanent sort of industry of job? I'm not at all dismissing the value of infrastructure jobs and the value of solid infrastructure. I mean, goodness knows we need it. But what about a permanent set of what kind of industry is the future of your district, I guess?
Well, that's a difficult question, but it comes partially from most of it's going to come from new technologies. And that's part of infrastructure as well. When we invest in green energy and green technologies, that's a pathway forward. Broadband is also a pathway forward. There's a lot of people that live downstate that would love to move to these beautiful towns in NY27. They'd love to be in Albion or Medina or Warsaw, and if they had access to broadband, because broadband opens the whole world up. And a lot of these people, they want a dog, they want a backyard, they want space. There's so many beautiful places all the way across from Canandaigua, you know, and beyond. There's so many places they'd come to if we had modern infrastructure. And that part of that's broadband. Once upon a time in America, we had Moxie. the moxie to build new buildings and great superspan bridges, et cetera, et cetera. We've lost that. And when we were 100 years ago, we were lacing all of Western New York with copper wires. Sadly, we're still using those copper wires for telephone, but also for our broadband or our internet. And that's why it's so slow and bad. If we started to invest in new technologies and started to lace this region with glass wires, fiber optic wires for broadband, it would create new business opportunities. And also, we have to invest in our current businesses, including agriculture. Agriculture is not some mom-and-pop guy just selling pumpkins, something like that. It's part of that, but it's also what feeds our country. And we have some of the best soil here in NY27, rich, black soil. Everybody listening to this call that's got a little bit of land, you can go in your backyard and plant a few potatoes and it'll grow. And we take that for granted. The rest of the world doesn't have that type of soil. So we have, and if our farmers can fight on fair ground with fair trade deals, they'll beat anybody in the world. So we have to invest in our existing businesses, including agriculture, which we have neglected for so long. And the people listening should understand that is not only an economic issue, it's a national security issue. Because if you can't get fruit and vegetables and milk and the things that we need to feed our families from our own state, you're going to have to get it from somewhere else. And what the answer has been for the last 20 years is you get it from Chile, or you get it from Mexico, you get it from somebody else. We need to protect our food supply chains, and that's by investing in our farms and making sure our farms are successful. And for too long, the things they need have been neglected.
All right. So real briefly, one more follow up there, and then I'll get back to phone calls here. You know, when you talk about fair trade deals, and you talk about a desire to see our congressional districts, our Western New York land produce more agriculturally, that sort of dovetails with what a lot of people have said about the lessons we've learned about supply chains during this pandemic and the need to create an American society where we're making more things again here. So when you talk fair trade deals, what's an example of a fair trade deal? I mean, listeners may remember recent deals like TPP. Is that it? Is it not it? Where are you going to set your sights in Congress?
Well, the problem with all these trade deals, this is where President Trump was right. The problem with these trade deals is they did disadvantage America. He was right. But the problem is he hasn't fixed anything. He just made some of it worse. So the trade deals that we've done, I'm not against free trade. I want trade to be done the right way. That's helping regular people. So far, all the trade deals have just made it easier for American companies to go overseas and to outsource jobs overseas. That's not what we need. We need access to markets. And the mistake we've made is moving away from international deals that could give us more access to markets like the Chinese market or the Indian market, who crave our milk and our produce and would love access to our supplies if we could get it to them. Now, those markets have largely been shielded from us because we do not have very much leverage. Deals that we could make with Japan and Korea and other partners to help box in and leverage our strength with our partnerships across Asia to get more access to the Chinese market, not just for agriculture, but for all manner of goods, is what we could do. Now, that's one thing I want to ask people out there. And I don't talk about this that much, but I'm someone who's multilingual. I've graduated from the top university in China. I'm a Fulbright in constitutional law from South Korea. I have extensive experience in that part of the world. And if you hire me or you pick me to run to Congress, I will be the fiercest advocate in Congress for these issues because I understand them and because I understand that part of the world well. So if you're listening and you say, hey, how are we going to compete for the next 50 years? Send a guy who gets it and gets the challenges we face because I'll help us set up so we can fight and we can compete.
Jim in Farmington is next on the phone with Nate McMurray. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to put a shout out to Nate McMurray and his campaign. He's been an inspiration for many of us here in Farmington, and I love his tenacity and coming back for the 2020 special election and giving Farmington choices and giving Ontario County choices and the whole district. So I think he has been a real inspiration, and I hope voters will take them seriously and cast their votes the right way. But I wanted to ask, I'm seeing the same sorts of campaign ads coming from Chris Jacobs as what Chris Collins did back in 2018. And my question is, when I see things like how Nate McMurray, one individual, gave away jobs to China, I see the absurdity of that, but at the same time, I see politics is full of absurdity today. So I'm asking Nate, where and how do you think anybody could say that, because it's clearly not possible, but and how would you respond to that overall?
I would ask people, thank you, Jim, by the way, I love Farmington. Kindness of the people of Farmington. I've been there many, many times, and I love it. And I love Canandaigua, the whole Honeyway Falls, all of it down there. I will say to you this. The New York Times they did this last year too, because they think because I speak a little Chinese or I speak Korean, they're gonna try to, you know, besmirch my image by saying somehow I exported jobs to Asia. It's a lie. And the New York Times ran an article about it a couple of years ago when Collins did. And if you think Collins is any different or Jacobs is any different than Collins, well, they're running the same ad. I mean, they're literally running the same playbook. And I would say to people, the real person that have exported jobs are the Jacobs family. And this is not something you need to be some, stealthy or accomplished reporter to figure out. Go call people that work at Delaware North. They've exported thousands and thousands of jobs to Asia, not 10 years ago, not 2 years ago, this year. They've cut finance jobs and other jobs, and they've exported to India for a fraction of the cost. It's so bewildering to see someone like Chris Jacobs lie so openly to the people of NY27. First of all, he was a Democrat who became a Republican and a Trump supporter overnight just to win this seat, just so he'd have the power to advocate for his own family and his own family's interests. And then beyond that, for him to lie like this, when his own family, they have done so much, especially in recent months with the COVID problems, to take away jobs from Western New York and to hurt working families here, it's shameful. I can only hope the people of the region are not stupid enough to fall for this. And I hate to use that word, but what else could you say? Because the guy's a fake. And beyond that, I've been through this once before with Chris Collins. I lost to Chris Collins. And I put my whole soul into that race. And I fought as hard as I could have in a grassroots campaign. And here we are doing it again. And I'm not perfect. I never said I would be. I am perfect. But I'm someone who is sincere and honest. And I hope the people of this district don't make the same mistake again and fall for these lies.
Pat in Rush, next on the phone. Go ahead, Pat.
Thank you for letting me reach out to you guys.
Sure.
And happy Wednesday. My comment was, I agree with taxing the super rich. Right now, I'm paying 18% of my paycheck to taxes, not just state, but also Medicare and all that other stuff. But 18%. And I know that there are people out there who are paying like 5% because they know where all the loopholes are, and they've got accountants that are doing this and that, and they make donations, which I would love to donate, but I can't afford to donate. So I agree with, and that's all I wanted to say. But thank you very much for your time.
All right, Pat, thanks very much. Anything you want to add to that, Nate?
Pat, you got to vote Tuesday. And I'm so glad you're seeing through the trick they pulled off for so many years. The trick is they give you a penny or give you a nickel, and they take $50. And that's what's happening. Remember, when they're talking about tax cuts for the rich, what they really are doing is pushing that tax burden onto you. And that's what they've done for years. I just talked to a small business owner. He just told me he's paying $7,000 a month in taxes. He's a pretty substantial business. It's a brewery. But I said, how are you even staying open? He said, we're not going to stay open. And so we absolutely have to reduce the tax burden on regular people. And the reason why the tax burden is so high on regular people is because of the Trump tax cuts and the tax cuts before that helped people like Chris Jacobs.
Let me get Jane in Rochester next. Go ahead, Jane.
Okay, thank you, Evan. I heard Donald Trump say on the radio about a week ago that the federal government is now out of affordable housing. They're completely out of it. And I'd like your guest to comment on that. And we don't have much time, but could you tell me what that means exactly? Is there no more regulation from the federal government, I suppose? And what about rent? If you could comment on that, please.
Okay, Jane, thank you. Go ahead, Nate.
I'm not sure what he was referring to, but I can tell you this, that we've gone one way for a very long time. And one way is to say we're going to give as much benefits as possible to the richest and strongest among us and hope that that trickles down and helps the rest of us. And in the process, we've emaciated the federal government. There is barely anything left. Everything's running on gas. There's so many positions that are not filled in President Trump's administration because here's the thing. By their own admission, they hate government. Now, I don't want bureaucracy. I want good government. I believe in the power of government. Like when this country was founded, we're not founded on the idea that every man for himself. No. The purpose of this country, and you can look at our founding documents, is to form a more perfect union for the common good. And somewhere along the line, we've lost that, and it was all about greed is good. Get yours and don't worry about anybody else. When I go to Washington, my vision and my approach will be always to make a government that cares for its people and it fights for the general welfare and the common good, just like our founding documents set out.
Nate, we, of course, would have liked to talk to Chris Jacobs as well, and we still would, and we've offered equal time. But in lieu of having a conversation with Chris Jacobs here, on the issues section of his website, the top issue listed is secure our borders. And he writes that he wants to stand with President Trump and work hard to build the wall along the southern border and make sure it is secure, protecting against illicit drugs, criminals, and traffickers that put our lives in danger. Would you do the same?
I don't want to build a wall. I want to secure the border. I think the wall they put up has fallen down. I mean, I'm not naive enough to think we don't need borders. But I do think what I hear from the farmers in NY27 isn't build the wall. It's get us visas. And so I will work to get – let me tell you guys, these farms that you see when you drive by, they're barely hanging on. And part of the reason they're barely hanging on is they have no one to do the work. And the people that have picked these fruit and vegetables, the people that have milked these cows, are not from here. A lot of these farmers can't even get their kids to stay on these farms. And some of them have thrived in the past when we had a good worker visa program. And they've been asking for a worker visa program for 25 years. That's what the farmers want. But instead of actually solving these problems and figuring out a way to bring people here safely and make sure we document who they are, people like Chris Jacobs try to scare you. They say, oh, be afraid of outsiders, be afraid of all these things that are coming, these boogeymen that are coming to get you. Meanwhile, they're picking your pocket, taking money out of your paycheck, giving $500 billion away without telling you where the money went. You know, it's a magic trick. They want you to look over here so they don't look over here so they can pick your pocket. Don't let them pick your pocket. Don't get distracted by these issues. Focus on the issues that are going to help your family, and that's what I'm focusing on. Healthcare, Social Security protection, and bringing jobs back to Western New York.
All right, briefly on healthcare, what's the healthcare plan you'd go to Washington and vote for right away?
I don't care what you call it, but here's the principle. Every single American has to be covered, and we can figure out a way to get there, but that's the principle, and I'm the only one in this race that will say that. The second thing is we need to protect pre-existing conditions. Right now, President Trump has a lawsuit in Texas where he's trying to remove protections on pre-existing conditions. That's wrong. The third thing is we need to make sure Medicare is secure, and that's something I'll work at. Now, listen, they always say, well, how are you going to pay for it? Well, we are the only developed country that hasn't figured out a way to cover all of its citizens. We're not the rule. We're the exception. France, the UK, Canada, Japan, Korea, Germany, they've all figured it out. We're the only one that hasn't. And here's the kicker. We spend more than any of those countries on health care. More, by far. And we have worse results. We have less hospital beds, and that this pandemic has proven it. So where is the money going? It's going to administrative costs. It's going to insurance companies. It's going to big pharma. So what I will fight for when I go to Washington is to make sure that every single American is covered, we protect Medicare, and then we also protect pre-existing conditions. Those are the principles. I don't care what you call it.
All right, roughly 1 minute. If you are elected to Congress, what are the kind of climate action bills that you could see yourself supporting and you think are within reach quickly?
Well, we have to take climate change seriously. If we don't do it, we're going to have the same problem we have with the coronavirus pandemic. We're not going to be ready. It's going to hit us. It's going to destroy our economy. But I want to say, if I only got 1 minute left, I got to say, number one, Evan, you asked some of the best questions out of any person I've ever spoken to. I've spoken to all of them at this point. You're great. And the second thing I want to say is I care about NY27. If you're listening to my voice right now, I love it. You can hear I'm sincere, and I'll fight for you. And I promise if you vote for me on Tuesday, and I need you to get out there and vote, and if you already voted, you plus two, get someone else to vote too, because it's the only way we can win. And if you pick me and I get elected, I promise to the people of Western New York, you will not regret it.
One more time, your website, Nate McMurray.
VoteMcMurray.com. I need you to get out there and vote on Tuesday.
Jacobs4Congress.com is his opponent. Jacobs, the number 4Congress.com. And good news, I've got 30 seconds left, so you got to give me one bill you'd vote for on climate action.
Well, I'm not sure which ones you're referencing, but I think, again, I got to go by principles because the devil's in the details.
That's fine. Maybe not a bill, but an idea that you're going to take to Washington that you think you can accomplish.
Invest in green energy right away. It's low-hanging fruit. It makes economic sense. It makes sense for our communities. It makes sense for our infrastructure. We have to figure out a way to advance green energy. It's something I worked on as a small-town supervisor. It has enormous benefits for our town. The town I was supervisor on, right now, they're putting sidewalks in the whole boulevard. There was never sidewalks there before. And a conduit for broadband. The money for that project came directly from solar panels that were on land that was industrial land zoned for industrial use for years and empty. So, yes, invest in solar infrastructure and other types of infrastructure immediately.
I know it's a busy campaign. Thanks for making time, and thanks for doing this, Nate. And we will talk to you again.
Thanks, brother. See you later. Take care, everybody.
Nate McMurray, a candidate for Congress in New York 27, the special elections Tuesday. And, of course, to state the obvious, door is open. We'd love to have Chris Jacobs. We've been trying to arrange that for quite a while. I know everyone's schedules are busy. We'll keep at it. Chris Jacobs is the Republican, Nate McMurray the Democrat, and they are both running to succeed Chris Collins, who soon enough is supposed to be in prison. I'm Evan Dawson, Rob Braden, Megan Mack, all saying have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.